You can't always get where you want. A collection of stories, adventures, and lessons from a land far, far away that few have ever heard of, and even fewer will visit, by Nicholas de Masi. It would be almost impossible to overestimate the vast diversity of West Africa. Many travel guides describe this region as being one of the most diverse regions on the planet. From culture to cuisine to traditions, language, religion, geography, weather, ethnicity, styles of governance, and standard of living. Guinea is certainly no exception to this trend. While it is virtually invisible to much of the outside world, this country has a tremendously interesting history in rich culture, which I have only barely just begun to understand. The longer I stayed in Guinea, the more I began to wonder why this country has remained so isolated during its six-decade history as a nation-state. Many of the Peace Corps volunteers who served in Guinea couldn't have identified it on a map a year or two before submitting their applications. Most Americans probably haven't even heard of the country. I'm constantly finding myself explaining the location and etymology of Guinea, especially the distinguishing it from other countries with similar names. Most people's minds immediately jump to Papua New Guinea, the island nation on the eastern tip of the Indonesian archipelago. While I would love to visit that country someday, Papua New Guinea is in fact further from Guinea than the U.S. East Coast is from Guinea. Guinea hasn't emerged as a popular destination for international tourists. Lots of people have heard of places like Tanzania and Kenya for Mount Kilimanjaro or the Serengeti. And southern African nations like Zambia, Botswana, and South Africa are regularly on the bucket list of adventurous tourists hoping to take a selfie with a giraffe or an elephant. But the big African fauna and stunning geography we often associate with the continent just aren't present in Guinea. As a result of these factors and many, many more, very few people even know this country exists. And yet, for all its mystery, for all its unknownness in the West, Guinea is the destination of today's intrepid young Peace Corps volunteer, Nicholas de Masi, in the book, You Can't Always Get Where You Want, a collection of stories, adventures, and lessons from a land far, far away that few have heard of, and even fewer will visit. How delightful it is to have discovered this book and to find a young college grad who is excited about starting their career in a small town, this time a small town in West Africa. Nicholas de Masi's memoirs of the fulsome welcome and the many helping hands he received as a Peace Corps volunteer in the West African nation of Guinea, as a new teacher who will focus on mathematics, is touching and upbeat. It's also an experience that few of us in America have had, and I'm not talking just about going to Guinea, though I'm sure many of us have dreamed of a Peace Corps stint overseas. In de Masi's experience, it all begins with a crash course in French, Guinea's national language, and Pular, the daily language of the folks he will be living with and teaching during his 2 years abroad, a learning curve our author finds steep, and yet also appealing to his ever-curious mind. Pular, you see, is an oral language that does not have a consistent written form, so learning it is as much hearing and using it as studying its unique tones and rhythms. De Masi's efforts to learn this language is truly a language immersion experience, and a personal experience that greatly helps him to understand the struggles many of his students have with the expectation that they receive their education in French, though Guinean children rarely ever speak that language at home, especially in the rural areas where he's teaching. And so his descriptions of the differences between daily life in the classroom and in the community, between the contemporary America he knows and life in rural West Africa, is presented with open eyes and with modesty. His goal is not to laud the middle-class lifestyle he grew up with in North America and contrast it to the quite different culture he finds in Guinea, but rather to help explain the people and the cultures he finds in rural Guinea, differences that range, as you might expect, from the radical to the more sublime. Certainly, the acceptance and uses of time are important ways that de Masi needs to adapt to and more subtle differences as well, reflecting the understanding of family and community in Middle America and rural Guinea. His stories of daily school life in Guinea are probably most reminiscent to those of our parents and grandparents, and yet they are uniquely Guinean as well. Damasi writes, for instance, of his students' often daily trek to and from his schoolhouse. Certainly there are some who live in the village in which he actually teaches, but many come from the rural communities around his rural school. And in a few cases, those students truly walk a 10-mile round trip. And while it's not uphill both ways, it is a walk, because there is no bus or car transport. He shares with us his quick understanding that his middle school and high school age students rarely have time for homework after or before classes. His students are expected by their family to do many chores when at home, and most homes in this West African nation are without print books or computers. So these kids are not surrounded by written and electronic tools that we take for granted here in so many parts of North America. It all makes for a much different lifelong learning environment, especially for those middle and high school age students Damasi is sent to teach. One note, flip phones are ubiquitous, as are radios. Both are important assets to have in a culture that is still largely without written or video communication options. Yet when you come to the core of his reminiscences, life in North America or life in West Africa, sometimes similarities jump out even more than differences. As he tells us, I had a wide range of personalities when it came to my students at school. There were the goody-two-shoe kids who arrived at school before class even started to erase the chalkboard. There were the loud and boisterous ones. There were quiet students with perfect handwriting. There were kids who fell asleep. And then there were the aggressive hand raisers. Guinean class sizes are large due to a lack of teachers and resources to build additional schools and classrooms. I had between 45 and 65 in each of my three classes, which was about average. In some schools, even in the city, the countryside, they share a school and can have over 100 students per class. So getting the chance to answer a question is wildly competitive. From the very beginning of elementary school, students who want to answer a question learn that they have to be loud and noticeable to get called on, which involves shouting things like, me, sir, pick me. A lot of them snap their fingers at the teacher or even stand up next to their bench in an attempt to be seen better. You really haven't experienced classroom chaos until you take a simple math question, who can tell me the properties of a parallelogram? And you hear the thundering voices of 5 dozen middle schoolers all screaming and yelling your name, banging on the desk, snapping their fingers, and nearly launching themselves out of their seats just to have the chance to regurgitate a memorized phrase from a textbook like a house parrot. Apparently, this behavior is often rewarded because on multiple occasions, I saw rooms of well-educated Ghanaian adults shouting and snapping their fingers to get a chance to be called on. I gotta say, this is not the only Peace Corps memoir I've read. And I've come to treasure these missives from Peace Corps volunteers. They are rarer than you might think, given that the Peace Corps has been an active force in American and international life since the 1960s. That said, the two that I have read to date, The Ponds of Columbia and today's title, are both set in sub-Saharan Africa. Both feature American Peace Corps volunteers embracing and embraced by the communities in which they live. These are, let's remember, young Americans plunging themselves into cultures and communities far from where they grew up. But what is a foreign culture to Americans is home and hearth to the folks with whom they will work for 2 years. These Peace Corps volunteers speak of homesickness, but they are united by their open-minded desire to learn and help show a wonderful aptitude for accepting what different is. For them, different is an experience to be embraced and celebrated. As he tells us in his final chapter, the old adage, it's not what you know, it's who you know, rings truer in Guinea than almost anywhere else. If you need a mechanic and you're trapped on a 10-mile stretch of road between two towns, you can't just call AAA the state police to fetch you a tow truck. You just have to hope that you either know someone in the area who can find a mechanic, or that someone friendly will pass by soon on the same road and give you a lift to the next town. If you want a job, there is no internet job board with postings. You just have to have eyes and ears on the ground to help notify you when there's an opening. Whether you need a doctor, a lawyer, an electrician, a plumber, or someone who can send a package to a relative in another city, there is no domestic postal service. You just have to have enough connections with other people to find your solution. In life, you can't always get where you want when you're alone. But collaborating with others, he writes, unlocks magnificent potential that is greater than the sum of its parts. When I couldn't move forward in the curriculum during normal school hours because of strikes, my students and I worked together to schedule evening classes. When the traffic in Lausanne was backed up for miles, we trusted a riled-up gang of motorcycle boys with our lives. When the U.S. government couldn't get its act together to approve my project, I summoned the community, and we decided to start moving sand. And now, when a major thoroughfare was buried in a mudslide, the open-ended generosity of the people of the prefecture allowed my cohort to arrive safely in the capital for a timely departure. I am confident, he writes, that the lessons I learned in this country will provide me with guidance and perspective moving forward. My time in Guinea caused me to think more critically about slowing down, taking life one step at a time, and developing solid relationships. The story of Guinea is one of struggle and hardship, but also of perseverance, determination, defying the odds, and capitalizing on the power of human connections. This, I believe, is how Ghanaians get where they want to go. It's inspiring. It's exciting. It's kind of sad sometimes, but it's so upbeat and open-eyed, it's a delight to read. You Can't Always Get Where You Want, a collection of stories, adventures, and lessons from a land far, far away that few have ever heard of and fewer ever will visit. But Nicholas DeMossi did, as a Peace Corps volunteer, and he brings it back to us. Glad he did. You Can't Always Get Where You Want. It's available at any of our fine local public libraries, and certainly at the West Lafayette Public Library. Thank you for listening.